Thanks for tuning in to the Secret Ingredient Podcast from Digital Sandwich, where we believe that everyone has a story behind their story, and that is where the secret ingredient lives. Unleashing the secret ingredient through a combination of personalized custom content, social media, and paid advertising is the very best way to build the relationships that you need to grow your business. With that being said, let's see what's in the kitchen and find out this week's secret ingredient.
Welcome back to another episode of The Secret Ingredient by Digital Sandwich, the podcast that digs deep into the hidden recipes behind some of the world's most successful people. You know the secret sauce that makes them who they are. Today's episode is brought to you by Digital Sandwich, the marketing agency that helps you whip up and share your own secret ingredient with the world. I'm your host, Adam LaFaber, and today we've got a special treat for you. Joining us remotely from San Antonio, Texas, is the ever energetic marketing maestro, Diana Richardson. With over 15 years.
Am I the secret sauce? Oh, sorry, I interrupted your intro.
Oh, you're a secret sauce, all right. With over 15 years in digital marketing, Diana is a powerhouse of SEO, pay-per-click, social and email marketing, and let's not forget, a public speaker who can charm an audience just as easily as she deciphers Google's algorithms.
Aww.
Little more difficult now than earlier. They're ever changing.
At the start of my career when Google was like, right. Here's numbers for you.
Diana's journey in digital marketing is nothing short of inspiring, and she's been engaging audiences since she could walk and talk. Her career, which officially kicked off in 2006, has seen her evolve from a pioneering SEO specialist to leading omnichannel marketing campaigns for big names like Content at Scale and Semrush. At Content at Scale, she masterfully executed a product launch across platforms like Hulu and Spotify, and as the audience engagement and social media manager at Semrush, she brought her unique blend of creativity and strategy to create compelling content and drive community engagement. But there's more to Diana than just numbers and strategies. She's a storyteller, a wine aficionado, and yes, she's got that snark. It's why we get along. So today, we're not just going to talk shop about digital marketing. We're diving into the secret ingredient that makes Diana what she is and a standout in the digital world. So welcome to the show. And let's uncover that secret ingredient.
Oh, gosh. You should write resumes. Like, oh, my God. Like, that was incredible.
Well, you've done some stuff. That was easy.
I've done a few things in my life.
You've done a few things. Yeah, that's... Yeah, I should write... I might need to write my own resume.
Woo.
I keep it up.
That was impressive. Like, that was great.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Yeah, let me know if you need anything. How you doing?
I'm fabulous. This is an amazing way to spend my afternoon. I love it. It's good to see you. We've been chatting on LinkedIn quite a bit, but it's good to see you.
No, it's good to see you too. We connected here a few months ago on a webinar, and the roles are reversed today.
A little bit.
The roles are reversed. I gave a mediocre performance, and now I think I'm better on this end of the mic. So we'll see.
I totally disagree. You're a fabulous podcast and webinar host, but I loved having you on as my guest. And I think you are the most like quotable, clippable person I have interviewed in the most recent times. So thank you for all of your snarky quotes. I meant to say, most quotable person I couldn't then share on social media because of the snarkiness.
Yeah, some of my stuff is not suitable for all audiences.
Anyone?
I did get in a little bit of trouble for how I explained AI with it being similar to my wife. I got in a little bit of trouble for that. But she ended up being okay.
Okay. Thank her for us for not divorcing you.
Right. Right. So you have a really, really interesting background, and I just want to jump into it. Right. So especially that transition from Semrush to Content at Scale. And that's sort of the time period that I met you in as well. Yep. But I'll just start with, are the machines, are they going to kill us? Are the machines coming to take over?
You know, not if marketers stay in charge, but you know, I can't guarantee anything in the future. So, you know, maybe.
So we should be nice. We should. So
yes. One of the. Always so say Mallory, your AI. Always. Always say please and thank you. Yes.
Mallory at my office just recently explained to us that she keeps forgetting to shut off the caps lock when she's typing. I'm like, quit screaming at ChatGPT, lady. Like, it's going to be the Boston Dynamics robot guys that go first and then you, because you're yelling at why are you yelling at it? Stop it. Ask it and thank it.
Yeah. It does understand tone. So shush.
It does. So tell me what inspired that shift and sort of like how that computes in your head.
Well, honestly, it came from a place of loving being an in-house marketer and loving the SaaS world. Going my transition from before Semrush, I was agency life, so very similar, obviously, what you do. And I had been in the agency world for a very long time, and I hadn't done anything in-house. So when I moved over to Semrush and I was in-house, I flipping loved it. And I ultimately worked with agencies, so it was like the best of both worlds. But I love being able to, as a marketer from agencies, I've used the tools, I've used the software, I've been there, done that, know the workflows and the use cases. So then to be on the other side and be able to talk to people like, here's how else you can do it. Here's how, I know you're struggling in this thing. Like, let me show you how to do it better and stronger. And like, I love that educational piece. So
right.
So when Content at Scale came along and it was this AI adding into the SaaS piece, I was all on board. It's a really cool tool, and I bought into the technology and what their vision of the future. And so it made sense to me to move from in-house SaaS to in-house SaaS, even though the tools are kind of different, but they still cover significant areas of a marketer's workflow. So I was down with that, like, to teach people how to use it, make agency life a little bit easier and stronger at the same time. So that's, I love that.
Right. And, you know, it's not like that particular tool, Content at Scale, like, abandons like traditional SEO. I mean, they have a whole suite in there about keywords and clustering and planning and whatever.
Checklist.
I was actually just playing with it earlier today.
And their philosophy on this, and something that I think is important to talk about when we talk about AI content, is that their mission statement basically is, this is not publish ready. It still needs you.
Right.
Like, it can write in your tone. It'll learn your tone, your brand's tone, your client's tone. It'll write however many characters you want around whatever topic you want and be 100% original. But it still needs that brain to get in there and, you know, make the optimization tweaks, make sure it is targeting the right audience, because you, the marketer, are going to know your client's audience better than the machine and things like that. Like, it still needs a human eye to make sure everything is making sense. And that's their philosophy on it. And the president is like a content agency person herself. So quality of that content is really at the core of that company, which I thought was really important coming into it.
I agree. We use the word hybrid a lot, because while AI is super cool and generative is what's getting all the buzz and whatever, it's lovely, but we still need the humans, right? So and it's sort of like human, then the machine, then human, then the machine, then human, then the machine, where you're kind of, you know, handing it off on this assembly line, but the tools are making up more and more of that assembly line. But you can't just ignore the human part of it. Otherwise, you're gonna prompt it to write rubbish in the first place. You know, you need proper prompting to begin with. You need proper research in the beginning, and then it is not ready for prime time whenever it's done. Maybe 75%, 80% done, but that's still a huge win, right? Like, that's a big win. That should allow us to do more things. What are those other things in your head? Right. So we're freeing up our time to do what?
Yes. Tracking, actually having time to spend in the analytics, because why are we marketing if we don't have time to actually get into the numbers and see how effective it's being? We have to spend, and we can use AI to even make that more efficient too, but data always needs that context. It's not black and white. It's not like an uptick in this isn't always necessarily a good thing if you don't understand the reasons and the story behind it. It also gives us more room to be creative and to build those relationships, because you have to have people, like, Google doesn't do business with you. It's your customers and your clients that do business with you. And so you need to, now you're going to have more free time to like really focus on them. And
you mean we should talk to our clients?
I know.
Wow.
It's actually kind of fun. Getting to know somebody else, like, it's actually kind of fun. And it helps keep your
business alive.
We have
amazing clients. I love talking to our clients. Absolutely. And if there's a way to do more of that, then we should. Because we're going to do better marketing for them, the better we understand
them. Exactly. Great conclusion. And it also frees up us to be more strategic and more creative, which that's why we got into marketing to begin with. I don't know if anyone ever got into marketing because they just really wanted to write a tweet. I don't know if that was anybody's ever motivation for studying marketing in college, right? Like, we want to be strategic. We want to be creative. We want to be, a lot of us, you know, one of the first things, especially for me, that goes by the wayside when I'm busy is learning or observing, because we learn so much about things we could be trying and experimenting if we're out there and surfing the web. Like, that's just how we can find new things, and we have more time to do that part of marketing if something is doing the assembly line piece for us. I think a factory in the assembly line is a really good analogy, because, you know, the Industrial Revolution did a lot of what AI can kind of do now. Write that first draft, tweak this, rewrite something if we need something repurposed, do a transcript. You know, it can do those things for us that we as marketers can get past now. And that's how we should be thinking about AI as marketers and not this takeover thing. I have this whole video on my YouTube channel about how poorly ChatGPT was marketed. And I think it kind of has... it's why we're in the situation we are now about misunderstanding about AI's role in marketing, because they didn't really talk about the role in marketing. And it was more of this fear factor of this takeover and eliminating jobs. And I mean, jobs are going to close out, but new job opportunities are going to open, because we need prompters and we need editors and we need dev and we need things like that. So there's going to be a lot of really, and we might need creative strategists now, because now we have time to be creative. And, you know, so there's actually going to be this whole other domino effect of roles that do start to open up and come from this. So it's not as scary as I think it was when it was released to the world.
You know, you make a couple great points that I want to touch on. The whole concept of the freeing up time to think and learn.
Yeah.
You know, so many times, like, man, oh man, we don't take time to think and learn, right? We really don't. I remember being in a mastermind group, and all these guys talked about every week was, wait, I did this and I listened to this and I listened to that and I read this book and I read that book and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, when do you fools think for yourselves? I consume a shit ton of content, a ton, podcast, blog, like a ton. Mm-hmm. However, you have to decompress at some point. You have to download that, compile it, aggregate it, and then sprinkle your own little fairy dust on it. Like, when do you think for your damn self? That's a huge big deal. And if you're always head down inside of execution, who's asking the question, are we even executing the right damn thing? Which takes me to your analytics. No one hires marketing for marketing. They hire marketing for sales. They hire marketing to drive sales. They don't hire marketing because they want shit looking pretty. Maybe they think they do, but if it doesn't result in sales. Eventually.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd like you to do this. I'm like, yeah, because you want more sales. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, we'd like you to do this. I'm like, right, because you want more sales. Right. Yeah. So the analytics matter. Like, we have to look at that stuff, and freeing up that time is huge.
And there's another job I've been seeing a lot lately, like sales enablement, which is this bridge between marketing and the sales team. So like, to your point, like, yeah, we have more time to like focus on where these two things actually meet. And there's this job opportunity in the middle. So there's all sorts of goodness that's coming from this.
And I have no idea if it's going to be net zero or not, but jobs are definitely going to shift. I mean, jobs are going to go away, and then they are going to appear in different forms, and you're going to need reskilled. I don't know if it's net zero law. I have no clue. I don't know that anyone does really. But it is going to be different. It's definitely going to be different. You know, I think people get confused about that too, and I'd love your input on this. They get confused. They think that adoption, widespread adoption of AI, means everybody has a $20 pro account for ChatGPT. That is not widespread adoption of AI. It is in the tools you're already using, like all of them already.
Yeah, I mean, it writes my LinkedIn posts, or at least it tries. You know, it's it's already built into some of these things. And the widespread adoption, yeah, doesn't necessarily mean the consumer's adoption. It means like LinkedIn buying into this technology and Microsoft buying into this technology. And that's what the adoption. And then Apple, like, you know, that's what the adoption is. But they're all going to find the ways to make things simpler and smoother and for us, as opposed to, you know, I'd hope that's my optimistic outlook.
I don't think we're close. I don't think we're all that close to the consultant or the strategist being unneeded. Some of the execution, I think, goes away. So like the bookkeeper may be a little concerned. The CFO, the controller, not so much. That's sort of how I look at it. The redundant things that we can probably task. You know, it was crazy. I saw is something like over 90% of radiology is now being read by AI, something like that.
Really?
Yeah, it's some absurd number. I need to look that up, but it's some absurd number that's been like one of the first places that there's been widespread adoption.
Interesting. I guess you get your results back faster, too. That'd be nice if something.
That would be nice. I'm just sitting there and they go, you're screwed.
Yeah. We see something. Or actually,
AI
robot saw something.
And I will type back in all caps.
Yeah. That is an interesting field. And it's cool that you brought that up because we're kind of focused on AI in marketing right now, but AI in the world, in the medical field, in there's all sorts of fields where this is coming to fruition and helping other industries out in new ways again. But you also said the word reskilled, which I love because I think, you know, it's funny because some people who've had the same job for when they first started to when they retire just doesn't happen as often as it did in the 1950s or 60s or 70s. You know, we go through these evolutions and people start out in A, but through these evolutions in technology and innovations, they end up at D, and that's where they end up retiring. So your career sees this vast, eclectic, you know, skill set because you're able to roll with the tide here. And you kind of have to do that in the innovative world that we live in, I think. And reskilling is always a very strong place to be at and be curious. And, you know, I love that LinkedIn has these really cool free courses and you can always take like these mini little things. You don't have to go back to college or anything like that. Of course, you're free to do it. But there's always like these nice little ways to get hands on and, you know, strengthen your copy editing skills or, you know, take a radiology beginner class, like even learn what it is or take a paralegal this, you know, you get so much exposure to so much now. And if AI just takes over the tedious stuff, you might have more room to expand on your own skills and have fun with it.
Well, and I totally agree. And what I'm seeing a ton of is people are caught up in this, it'll write blog posts for me. It'll write social media posts for me. It'll write an email, like the South Park. It'll respond to my girlfriend for me, like in the South Park episode. I don't know if you ever caught that. I haven't watched South Park since I was in college. Somebody messaged me and they're like, you have to watch the AI South Park episode. It is hysterical.
It's
hysterical. And then you got to watch to the end and to the credits.
The credits. Okay.
it's fantastic. But, you know, but they're missing what I love it for is summarization, ideation, and then suggestions. Right. So the other day have you played like with the visual all that much where you screenshot stuff or upload a picture or an image or whatever?
You played with that all that much? I have not really got into like the image generative AI piece of all this.
So I haven't done a whole lot like with Midjourney and that stuff and DALL-E with the generative stuff. But I'll give you an example. So we were looking at a newsletter that we had done for a client. We're like, wow, the open rates were good. That's fairly typical, whatever. But the metrics weren't matching what it typically does. I'm like, man, I wonder what we could have done better. I wonder what we didn't see here. And so we screenshotted the newsletter, took a screenshot of the email, uploaded it into ChatGPT, and asked it for its evaluation and suggestions to make better and why perhaps it was not performing as well as we would have liked.
Okay.
And it gave like really, really, really good feedback.
Wow.
Yeah. Like really good feedback. It's super cool. Sometimes my wife in the morning will be like, who are you texting? Who are you talking to? I'm like, I'm talking to ChatGPT. I got questions. I got questions. Josh isn't up yet. He's usually my early person. You're out west, so I can't bother you early in the morning. So yeah, I'm just talking to ChatGPT. I need a friend.
Oh, see the other benefits of AI: friendship,
French and companionship. Yes,
sounds like a Black Mirror episode, to be honest with you.
But I think that's a point that people miss. Is I just did this the other day. Like I gave it a bunch of information, and then I started asking it questions about that information. I didn't. People do a whole lot of telling it what to do rather than asking it what to do, and that's a whole different. It's a whole different avenue to go.
Yeah. Well, I love this. Let's talk about this ideation piece because that is, I mean, how often does your brain get stuck? Like, especially when I was working with the same types of clients over and over again, I worked with construction equipment dealerships, commercial truck dealerships, RV, power sports, and marine dealerships over and over and over again for 15 years. And I, of course, my brain got stuck on how to write an interesting homepage for a dealership that sells skid steers for the trillionth time in my career. So I would have loved something like this to get ideas on how to tell a better story, how to, like the SEO part I got, like I don't need the SEO tip. Like the creative ideas or, you know, what else can I do to this About Us page that will make it more interesting and, yeah.
So different angles around that messaging. I completely agree because especially it's, you know, we say stuck. I think at least for me, what it is I'm too close to it. I've been staring at it too long, especially with our own brand. Like, so you mentioned sales enablement a few minutes ago. We actually just launched something we call Guided Convos, which is that it's sales enablement. We do that. Yeah, we completely do that. You never wonder what to post on LinkedIn again. We will do that for you combined with outbound prospecting and the messaging and whatever. Now, we can 100% help pretty much anybody with that. But let me tell you, writing the damn messaging for the landing page and everything about the service where we do this, I couldn't even eat my own dog food. I'm like, I'm writing this shit and whatever. Showed it to my buddy at this other agency, my agency friend. And he's like, dude, you're really, really, really good at writing messaging, except for your own. Like, this is, I don't
so
even know.
True. He goes,
I know what this is. And I don't know what the hell this is. I don't understand it.
It's so true because this is why most marketers don't have their own websites because we just like suck writing about ourselves. Like we suck marketing ourselves. It's so true. But I love that example because, oh guys, the struggles of writing your own landing page. Cause you know, like it has to convert. Oh, it has to be like, build hype. It has to like, oh, what words would I use? Like, it's such a struggle.
Well, you start talking to yourself in a way that you would, like, what am I thinking here? Like, so, well, I don't want it to sound too simple because somehow I'll devalue the product or service if I make it sound too simple. Now, if a client said that to me, I'm like, yeah, but if you don't make it sound simple, no one will care. The value will be a big old zero because they won't freaking understand it, man.
Or they won't get to it. Yeah.
I need to like sit with a mirror there in front of me and go, look, man, what are you doing?
That's
but
so
the ideation
true.
Is incredible. That is really where we found probably the most impact.
You have been one of the most creative innovators, though, I think of your internal processes. Like you're always kind of moving levers to get better results, always with the client, you know, in the front of your mind. But I think you're one of the most creative people I've had conversations with about like your internal processes. And so the sales enablement thing that you just mentioned, and what we've been chatting about, like in the last week and a half too, about how to get your get the conversation going with your client. You've been doing like video interviews and things like that, so that their content is so much more personalized, yet kind of easier to create and replicate. You're very good at like the replication process. So I think that's a really, and you've been playing with your tools, you've been playing with your toys and bringing that into your process too. I wish all agencies had a little bit more Adam in their brain, because it's, that's the key though, to making this scalable, right? Like, and to using our tools of the trade and those innovations work for our teams and our clients. And I think you do a really good job of that.
Well, I appreciate the compliment. I really take that from you, not lightly. Thank you.
No problem.
The concept was always, could we get the triple win, right? Can we win for our clients? Can we win for the agency? And can we win for the team? And I think that that was the original concept of launching the agency in the first place, was I thought that we could create a new kind of company, or the company that I never got to work for. Could I actually create it? And I won't say that we have, because that's always in motion. But I feel like we're on a path, that maybe we can actually do that. But that's exactly what it is can we stay lean and efficient by using the tools, but also innovative and valuable, right? So that interview piece is critical, because while everybody and her brother can iterate for, you know, $10 an article, something fairly decent quality, or $5 or $0, right? Like they can iterate something with fairly decent quality, but it isn't good enough. Research papers weren't fun in high school, not fun in college, and they should be outlawed in the real world. Like, why are we doing research papers? So I think, I don't know how we're doing content without doing an interview or without getting some sort of soundbite or whatever. Otherwise it's this, and you mentioned the repetitiveness of it, or the scalability of it. We can do the same outline and then have 20 chiropractors and have 20 completely different articles.
Exactly.
But we've done the work once. We did the work one time.
Well, but don't diminish the work that goes into fine tuning that process too, because there's a shit ton of work that goes into that.
Yes.
As like someone who's been on the marketing operations side of things too, like it takes a lot of work just to finally get that process in place. But once you do, like, it's freaking magic. And there's this tying this all back into like AI generated content. If everyone was using ChatGPT to write about chiropractors, the content would just get so diluted with the same boring stuff over and over again. It really takes the personality of the chiropractor themselves to make that content interesting, because that's what, especially in a field like that, like, you want to go to someone that you can relate to and that you like.
Yes.
And if you're not going to, like, and you're doing this research digitally and not meeting this person in face to face, like, that's where the content pays off, in my opinion, because it was drafted through Adam's amazing process, but personalized through the client's involvement, through their buy-in, and now it's going to be content with a purpose. I think we're also thinking, or I think some people are thinking, yes, I can spit out 100 blogs a day and make like so much more money now, and it makes me scared for search results because it's just going to be crapola over and over and over again. And so I'm also curious to see how Google handles the crapola.
They're going to do something. I mean, they're going to have to do something, right?
The influx of content that's about to happen is going to be like nothing Google has ever seen before. And I hope they're prepared, because it's going to be mostly crapola. And I know that Google's gone through this whole the quality content, was it called quality? There's a superlative there.
Helpful content.
Helpful content. Thank you. The helpful content update. And I know they just did that, but Google's always been like five steps behind on like quality standards. And so I'm a little nervous for Google with an influx of AI content, except for Adam's team. It's always going to be good and personalized, but.
Well, so I'm nervous about what happens there too. Except I also think that it creates a void as well. It creates opportunity for those doing it correctly. Providing Google handles it right, and it is just helpful content.
Dependent on Google.
Yeah. The other thing that I think about is that concept of what is helpful, right? So often we blog just for the sake of blogging, I swear, like, oh, you need content on your site, and let's just throw up some bullshit so that you have content on your site without really any consideration for what the purpose is. And it's sort of how I like to treat people. Like I like them. I like leaving them a little bit better than I found them. I want my content to leave them a little bit better than we found them too. You know, if you think about, you've been doing this longer than I have, Diana. If you think about going to like a digital marketer's website and reading one of their pillar pieces or long blog articles with infographics and video and quotes and a downloadable and a template. Same thing like with HubSpot, SEMrush, Ahrefs, same thing. Yeah. You go and read one of their pieces of content. You have learned something. You have probably downloaded something and got on their list for the 342nd time. But you are changed. Your before and after state was changed by that piece of content. And I think that to me is the litmus test. That's really what we should be striving for. Even if it's an article about migraine headaches for the local pain management center, even if it's an article about rotator cuff injury, whatever it is, whoever's reading that should leave that article knowing more than whenever they landed on it. It shouldn't just be written for a ranking.
Well, and you know what industry I think of? Because something like in the medical industry, there's a clear like pain point and solution. Like hopefully that content does help you get rid of your migraine because that migraines suck. I think of like recipes, like the world of recipes. And when the reason that they're not all just pie crust filling this is because Google said you have to have unique information or you will not show up at all. And so they started telling us the stories behind this pie recipe or this meatloaf recipe. And now we have to scroll through grandmother's memories to get through this 7 recipe dinner that I'm just trying to like get in front of my husband tonight. So whenever I think of these algorithm shifts, I think of content like that because the audience for a recipe is, you're purely in the home. Like you are really trying, like it does need to be helpful. Like it needs to teach you how to put these ingredients together properly, how it's going to provide nutrition for your family, how quickly you can get it done so you can move on to other parts of your day and what you can do with the leftovers, you know, like that's a piece of content that can really affect like your day to day, true to your heart life. And we've muddled this helpful content definition because at first it needed to be unique. At first it needed to, you know, then it needed to be this. Then it, well, seriously, at first it just needed to have keywords. Then that, that didn't last very long because it was, that like was a terrible time in our history. But, you know, it just has this evolution. So to be helpful does come with a lot of different subtexts and meanings, and what's helpful to me, what's helpful to me for treating a migraine might be something that you've tried 7,000 times and it never works. And like, you know, so I didn't like when they called it the helpful content update because it's such a subjective term.
It's a great point that I have not heard anyone make, actually. It's a great point. Yeah, what's helpful to you is maybe perhaps not helpful to me and who, but I think that's what this all boils down to anyways, who decides what's helpful and what isn't, who is deciding that?
Well, and I think Google backs that up too. Again, they used to have like that duplicate content penalty back in the day. Now it's just kind of a filter. So I think that's, they still kind of cover their butts with that because if there are 5 articles on migraine treatments, they should all offer five different things. So if you do have a migraine and article number one isn't helpful to you, hopefully article two will be, because it's offering something different for you than article one. And it's not repeating the same helpful, quote unquote, information. And that's why the unique piece is still a hardcore player in this. And that's why backlinks are still a hardcore player in this, because, you know, Mayo Clinic references article number one, but, you know, Johns Hopkins references article number two. Like, that's why these are still players in the SEO field. And that's why they're still good. And that's why they play into the helpful content thing. But yeah, again, like, that's why Google always wants something different, so you can find what's helpful. That's what Google, like, that's Google's goal, is to, like, solve your problem. That's been its goal from the day one. And
so I shouldn't search on TikTok for answers to questions. I should search on Google.
Oh no, you can totally do TikTok. I mean, that's a whole other conversation over there. But
yeah, there was a whole freaking conversation in my office about that. I got called a boomer by the end of it. So
for using TikTok?
Well, no, because I'm like, what do you mean you use TikTok to search, like, to search for answers? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
And I'm like, why wouldn't you Google it? This is disturbing to me. TikTok's algorithm is skewed towards entertainment. Google's is skewed towards giving you the right answer. When I search on TikTok, weird things come up. Maybe that has to do with what I'm searching for, though.
Yeah. So I've done, you know, like, resume tips. I've done fitness searches. Yeah, I've done things like that. And something, honestly, TikTok, I think, is more of a competitor with YouTube than I would think with Google.
I would agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree. So, although I think YouTube is going to be crazy in 24. Like, that's the platform I'm probably most excited about.
Me too.
YouTube and LinkedIn. Yeah.
And it's so underused. Like, especially my freelance work. I'm so surprised at how many of my freelance clients aren't using YouTube for shorts, for quick little videos, or even for ads, because that's where so much entertainment is happening. People have cut the cord and watch YouTube. Yep. Like, you could get to even traditional paid ad advertising on YouTube, but then you could also be creating some fun stuff too and informational things. And I'm still shocked at how many people are not using YouTube in their marketing mix.
We just started for us, honestly. So obviously this podcast goes up on YouTube, and then that starts the chain reaction of all the repurposing, up-purposing, turned into, you know, by the time we're done with it, dozens of pieces of content. That's also how our content process starts with clients. Is we do the interview, it is via YouTube, and then it gets turned into all the things, right? But it's huge what can be done, you know, thinking about YouTube centric and then outward from there. So, like, the first step is to get whatever it is that we're doing into YouTube and then move on from there.
Yeah. And using AI, you can then make the transcript, or you can easily now get a blog post about that episode that isn't necessarily the transcript. You can elaborate on it or create some context around the episode, and you can have AI do that for you. And because it can understand the context of the video in order to make its own piece. So I love features like that, because it does make repurposing and the distribution, like the content distribution strategy, a lot easier and less manual. And
and it also lends itself really well to the methodology for distribution around personal rather than just brand distribution, which I think is way more effective, at least today. It's getting harder and harder and harder for the brand to do a bunch of distribution. Like, no one's looking at your LinkedIn page. No one cares. However, if I share something on my personal about the brand with, again, my additional 2 cents and whatever, that's a much different, that's way more likely to do something. And then if I tag, you know, my buddy Diana in San Antonio with my, you know, post that I'm doing or whatever, then that gets even more engagement, right? But folks don't have the time to do the initial post. I'm sorry, folks don't have the time to create the content in the first place, let alone do the post, let alone do the engagement, let alone do the commenting.
Yes.
Right on. They don't have the time to do the things.
But it blows my mind the misconceptions around, and you opened this box, so this is your fault, but it blows my mind.
It usually is.
Misconceptions still around organic social and like just posting on your brand page is going to be this lead gen strategy.
No.
And I still hear like, oh, hell, I know we need to be posting on our social media. I'm like, kind of like there's way more to it now at this point. Like it's not like, and then trying to explain the nuances of how many eyeballs are actually seeing your brand page versus
five.
The tags or the comments or the groups. Yeah, it's all about eyeballs, of course. And
five
not a lot
of them
happen on your brand page, like you said.
No, not a thing. You know, and then let's run ads. Now, I'm a big fan of social media ads. I think the targeting is great, et cetera.
Yes.
But, you know, especially if you're more of a thought leader, a consultant, a coach, high ticket, something like that, you know, a personal branding strategy is way more likely to get you a $25,000 client or a $5,000 a month client than this ad about this one product or service that you offer that's running. If you're actually on the platform, engaged, delivering valuable content, demonstrating competency, that's actually our definition of content is a demonstration of competency and expertise wrapped up in your personality. That's content. But it builds the bridge from the person that needs to know, like, and trust you to you. So way more effective, the personal stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And I hadn't actually thought about it for showcasing, like, thought leadership. I've found that it's much more productive for events. As opposed, like the same thing, like just not running for ads for the same product over and over and over again. And
yeah,
it's more fun for and more productive for events and things like that. But I hadn't thought about it from a thought leadership perspective.
So,
that's interesting.
So my analogy would be the weatherman, right? So if you watch the local news here locally, I watch Channel 3, right? And there was a weatherman, Michael Estime. He left. He went to Detroit. Now, I was upset when this guy left. I was upset. I'm like, oh, it's Michael Estime's last day. I've never met that guy ever in my life. Don't know him. He doesn't know me. He could care. He doesn't pay my bill. He doesn't care. He could care less about Adam. Never heard of him. However, the weatherman delivered valuable content to me daily, whether or not I could wear a Hawaiian shirt or not. Daily wrapped up in his personality, right? So it drove, he was able to manufacture know, like, and trust. Celebrities do this all the time. We get upset when, you know, our favorite Golden Girl passes away. We've never met them ever, but they did deliver valuable content to us wrapped up in their personality, right? Mm-hmm. So it's this weatherman effect. We can actually have people know, like, and trust us, and we've never even met them before if we have a content strategy.
And the time and the personalization to do it. And because that's another thing, too. I think businesses would absolutely thrive if they could have that person to be that thought leader. But they don't have, I mean, they don't even have time to do, to like sit down and like have a thought. Like you said, like, how do you have, you're reading these books, but like, when do you have time to like think for yourself? And we're so bombarded with so many other aspects of the business that I hope AI can streamline for businesses, that we can get into the interesting part and hear from these people, because there are so many interesting, and like you, for example, like there's so many interesting thought leaders, people who don't have like the global stage, who aren't like the famous people. There's these guys nitty gritty into their businesses doing cool, creative, innovative things on the daily that we don't get to hear from as much because they don't have the time to have like, they don't prioritize it the way that you do. And I wish they did more, because I've met such interesting people in my career that I wish would take the time to be thought leaders and create a LinkedIn post or just create like a 2-minute video and share their thoughts, because it would be so interesting and I would listen.
So I think that this right here is what allows that to happen, right? So that again is part of that service that I was talking about, is we jump on a Zoom call with you. It doesn't have to be a podcast. I would love for them to come do it in Josh's booth here.
Yeah.
You know, as a podcast. They don't have to, though. We can jump on a call with them. We can look at Google, search engine result pages, get the people also ask questions around their you know, 6 to 10 core topics that they want to be known for. We can do that and then ask those questions. We could be done in 20 minutes, half hour, whatever. And then that should yield an entire month worth of LinkedIn posts. There you go. There's your LinkedIn posts. Done.
Yeah.
What's your opinion about blank? What do you think about blank? Tell me about a time this happened. Tell me a story, you know, and in the storytelling, right? So, you know, you could end up with like four different posts on the same exact topic, because now I'm going to say, hey, so that was a really great point about the, you know, taking the time to look at the metrics and actually thinking about what you want to do next. Tell me about a time that somebody didn't do that, but they should have, Diana. You're going to tell me. And now that's a great LinkedIn post. That you didn't have
lesson
to write.
Learned. People love learning lessons on LinkedIn like that. Yeah. And yeah, there's your thought leadership. There's the personalization. There's what makes doing business with you more interesting than doing business with somebody else right there. That's your, it becomes a differentiator.
Yeah, right. No, it absolutely does. What do you think? So we're talking a whole lot about technology and the AI and the data and whatever. What do you think that does to creativity?
Frees us up to be more creative. I think it, even if you're the dev working on the AI, like the foundation for it already has enabled you to think four steps further. It allows you to use your brain in that creative space than ever before. So I think tools are one of our greatest assets, and we can rely on them, but we need to hone our own selves as tools as well. There is no replacement for us. We were talking about, we love AI for ideation, but we are the ones that have to make sure that ideation makes sense. We're the ones that have the background that can choose which idea makes the most sense for this particular situation. We're the ones that can, you know, choose the headline we prompted it to write and analyze it to make sure that it's going to resonate with the audience. We're the ones that do that, not the tools. So our creativity gets maybe reinvigorated. I think of like the Mad Men days where they didn't have anything to tell them except their own brains and conversations with their clients and understanding the world around them. And AI, we've gotten very reliant on technology, but now we get to reinvigorate our own creativity because the technology can do the things that we have been tasked with in the past. And we get to, you know, reignite the creative marketer that was excited to go to college for marketing and like do this as a career and like get refired up. And that's where AI is most interesting, because it allows us to be the marketers we thought we would when we were kids and embarking on this career path.
No, I agree with that. And I think that that's very true. Now, what do you think that it does for the junior marketers that don't have to do the tedious stuff, right? They don't know what burning their hand on the stove feels like. What does that do for them? We had this discussion in my office the other day. It actually came from a webinar that you were doing that came up. That topic came up about, you know, some of these things, the tedious, the task stuff that you would normally hand off to like a junior marketer, somebody just getting started that needed to learn. Now you probably don't do that. And what impact does that have on them and their learning curve and their understanding of marketing, period?
So I don't think of it as any different than teaching someone how to set up a Google Ads campaign. Mm-hmm. It's the platform that you use to get the results. We teach them how to use the tool, but we don't let them lose sight of what we're doing. You're creating faster blog posts, but we're not creating blog posts for the hell of it. We are creating it to create this conversation, to get people to grow to get people so our email list can grow. We're creating this blog post with a goal. So we teach them about marketing goals. We teach them about what it means to create for a purpose and not create for the hell of it and because it's faster and easier. We teach them what it means to convert, to engage, to do business with people and let the machine do the tasks. I mean, when you think about how the assembly line, when they first started making cars, like we can do this faster so we can get more people mobile and traveling and creating moments. And that's that, that you can't let the assembly line forget about the true purpose of the end. And so that's what we teach our junior marketers. We teach them the purpose.
That makes sense. That makes sense. That's great. What, so you, you're a wealth of knowledge spanning your 15-year career here. What's the best piece of advice you ever got?
Just go for it. I was in my very first job, which I was at for 15 years, well, 13 years. I have like an 18, 20-year career at this point. And I was there for a very, very long time. And I was very comfortable, but not growing anymore. I wanted to grow my team skill set. I wanted to add new services, and I kept getting told no. And I found an agency that I was very attracted to, like organically, but they weren't hiring specifically for a digital marketer. And my one of my mentors, she said, just go for it. You never know. Like maybe they're 2 days away from posting for a job that you're perfect for. Yep. You don't know. Just go for it. And I did. And it ended up being a year and a half long career with the most creative, beautiful, fascinating agency I've ever met. I'm still friends with them to this day. I learned so much about storytelling and the other aspects of marketing, creating personas from scratch, creating a brand from scratch, things I hadn't been taught in a 13, 14 year career up until that point. And I built a digital marketing platform and suite of services to grow their agency from the ground up, something I had never done before, but they trusted me to do it. And I did it because I got the advice of just go for it. So
I love that advice.
Yeah, we see brands and we see people that we want to work with. We see things we want to do and goals we want to achieve. And so much of it depends on other people. If there's something that you really want to establish for yourself, like just go for it. You might have to invest a little bit of your own money in yourself, but that's a good thing, you know. And, you know, if some amazing brand, if Apple doesn't have the exact position you're perfect for, write to them, start networking with their team. You never know who you might meet and then connect with and can get you an in. Like you just never know the power of people. So just go for it. If you're really driven to it, and there's this, always trust your organic attractions too, I think, because that is already your natural buy-in to a job or a company or people when you have that like natural attraction to something. So trust that when it happens, because it's gotten me in some very, very amazing situations throughout my career.
You know, I would agree with that advice because I've been on the other end of that, right? Somebody else just went for it. I think the last three team members that have joined the team were cold emails. Nice. Saying, hey, I saw your website. Hey, I saw you on LinkedIn. Hey, I follow your TikTok. You guys are nuts.
I want to be part of it. I want to be a part of the crazy.
Yeah, you're not. I know you're probably not hiring, whatever. But we found good people. And we get several of those emails. And I know that a lot of them are just they're emailing every marketing agency saying that. But the couple that have made it past just sending the email, I know wrote the email, and I know they only sent it to us because it was just way, way, way too specific. And they are here now because they just went for it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's advice that I still, obviously still resonates with me to this day. So it's helped me a lot through my career.
All right. So I think we've been at it about an hour now. I want to go ahead and bring it in for a landing. I normally end with the rapid fire round. Are you ready?
Deep breath.
Yep. Deep breath. You good?
Go for it.
Okay. Brussels sprouts. Yes or no?
No. They give me heartburn.
Really?
Yeah. They give me heartburn.
Oh, mate, a vegetable. Huh. Early bird or night owl?
A little bit of both. So I am a chronic napper also, but I get, I get up at 6 a.m. pretty much every single day, and I work in spurts. So that's just something about myself that I've been able to discover since working remotely. I work in spurts. So I usually Work for about like 4 hours. I take a little break, do something around the house, eat lunch, like nap for about like 30 minutes. And then the second half of my day starts. And then I'm up till 11:30. Yeah.
Wow. That's okay. I wish I was a napper. I would like to nap. I could nap.
My brain.
During the day. Actually, they would say that I do because I've been known to fall asleep at my desk. Happened.
My brain needs a reset. Like I'm a, you said this in my intro, like I'm a very energetic like person and my brain is always on fire and it needs a reset. It just needs a reset at part of the day. I don't need to nap for like 3 hours, 30 minutes. I even set my like alarm. All I need, just a little reset. And then I am ready to go for that second part of the day. Some food. I love eating too. I need food. So that and a little nap. Fan. Yeah, I love it.
I am also a fan of eating. Eating and napping. I like those both. Network. Is that a noun or a verb?
Well, both. Absolutely both. Same with community. Like it's the same. You can be a part of a community or you can community your way into things. Like it's both.
Agreed. Innovation or tradition?
A little bit of both.
That's a tough one.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, stick with the tradition. But we wouldn't be talking about AI if someone didn't innovate at some point.
Right. Give me one word that encapsulates your journey.
Eclectic.
Mm-hmm. What's your favorite sandwich?
An Italian. I love a good Italian sub.
Hot or cold?
Hot. I'll eat it cold for sure, but I love like a hot, toasty, melty, cheesy Italian sub with dipping sauce.
Yep. It's got to have the mortadella on it too, because that gets all crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm with you on that one. Well, thanks for being on. I really appreciate it. It's super cool to chat with you again. I was hoping that we would cross paths again.
Oh, I think we're like stuck together now.
Okay. I'm in. We actually have more to talk about. So we definitely do now that we're stuck.
We're stuck.
Awesome. Thanks so much for being on.
Thank you for the invite. I love talking to you. It's always so much fun. You always have such great ideas. So anytime.
Cool. Well, thanks for tuning in to today's episode of the Secret Ingredient Podcast, brought to you by Digital Sandwich Agency, where we believe that everyone has a story behind a story, and that is where their secret ingredient lives. We help business owners find their secret ingredient and use it to build the relationships they need to grow their business through a combination of personalized custom content, social media, and paid advertising. See you next time on The Secret Ingredient. Thanks, Diana.
Of course.